Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. No matter how hard they try, they are trying very, very hard as well to silence the truth from this platform. Little housekeeping announcement yesterday. I'll tell you what, we lost all of our internet connectivity for several hours. So earlier today, the show went up from last night, the show went up today on HagmanReport.com. HagmanReport.com, that's where you go to bookmark that site. And for all of your information and show needs, I've got a great show lined up for you today as we celebrate America, not celebrate, I'm joking there, April Fool's Day. And I don't like April Fool's Day. Steve Quayle and I were having an off-air discussion how we both detest that, premise of the April Fool's Day. Anyway, day 72, America held hostage by the communist Chinese globalist, scumbaggery. I don't know how else to describe that, but that's about the best way I can. And again, day 72, America held hostage. And of course, we still have the permanent, fencing around the Capitol building. And, you know, it's very simply, if they weren't afraid of what we're doing, or if they weren't afraid of what they were doing, that would anger the masses, the people, then of course that fence would not exist and neither would the military presence. It's also day number four of the Derek Chauvin trial in, Minnesota. I'm going to tell you right now, point blank, it doesn't matter how it goes. It does not matter, guilty, innocent, or guilty, not guilty, legal term. It doesn't matter. You are going to see riots extraordinaire from this. And of course, you had the obligatory, OJ-esque, type of environment there over the last 4 days. But I'm going to tell you, and the EMT that, if you saw the clips, EMT that testified. It's interesting when a witness gets in an argument with defense counsel. I've been there as a witness. I've had arguments and I've been dressed down just as that EMT has, in the court, in both civil and criminal court. And it's, but not as an EMT, as a investigator. And it's kind of funny because sometimes depending on if you know what you're doing, you can draw it out and you can actually, prevail. But I digress. I don't want to get into that. That's just, window dressing for what's really happening today. We've got a great show lined up for you today. And I want to introduce folks. I don't know if I, you know what, unless you've been living under a rock, you know this name, you know this site, you know this person. Christian Westbrook, Ice Age Farmer, iceagefarmer.com. You know him. I know you know him. I'm sure you've seen him. Christian Westbrook, he's the founder of Ice Age Farmer Broadcast, and that looks deeply into the future of our food supply. You know, the stuff you eat, from the agenda to defile and centralized control of it. Remember what they say. You control the food, you can control the population. From that to how these challenges must inform our response, a rapid move back to decentralized regenerative food system. Okay. Now think about that. Do not let that slip by you. You've got to really understand what that means. And, Christian is a permaculturalist and I had to ask what that was. And he'll explain that more in detail. The answer I received was, well, kind of like the old days. Again, keep that in mind. I oversimplified it. But he's a food freedom activist, homesteader, and a father with a background in artificial intelligence and a deep love of humanity, of loving one's brother, as we are commanded to do so. And I respect him for that. artificial intelligence is what I have, versus the intelligence, the real intelligence of people like Steve Quayle and Christian Westbrook, iceagefarmer.com, both of whom are with me right now. And I'm not going to spend any more time going over headlines. I'm just going to turn it over to Steve Quayle, my brother, my friend, the man who is behind the upcoming conference, Extinction Protocols. Go to gen6.com, of course, and sign up. Sign up for the video on demand, sign up for the DVD, sign up for, just sign up, because you need this. I'm telling you, you need this. I had a conversation very quickly last evening with Daniel Holdings, okay, who is pictured in this array of speakers. And, boy, talk about a sobering conversation. All right. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Quayle, stevequayle.com, gen6.com for Extinction Protocols. And everything else that is good. SteveQuayle.com for headlines. Steve, how are you, sir?
Good, Doug. And I think it's a treat to have Christian on with us today, because Ice Age Farmer, I'd say, is from the time I first knew about Christian and his website and his work, I thought, here's a man and a voice that's raised up that knows what he's talking about, but gets the big picture. I was flabbergasted, literally. And it's tough to flabbergast me. I know that sounds jaded. But by his latest article, there is a war, ladies and gentlemen, on everything that God created for us that was good for us. Everything from the herb of the field to the animals, everything is going to be taken away and substituted by the synthetic offerings of fallen men and really wicked men. I have a really simple statement. I'm turning it right over to you, Christian. Everything God made and blessed and created is good. Everything that man is trying to displace God with is hideous, deadly, and horrid. Christian, thank you for being one of our key speakers too this year on the Extinction Protocols. The globalists have basically initiated their protocol to depopulate, and that goes along with starving people into oblivion. Christian, thank you. Go ahead and take it. When you're tired, give it back. But people want to hear you, and I want to hear you. So thank you so much. Doug wants to hear you. Just take it away and share with people the dire nature of what is planned and what's taking place from your perspective.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Steve. And Doug, I just want to thank you very much for having me on to have this conversation today. I do want to say before we get started that I have been listening to you and praying for you for many years now, and for Eric the Tech as well, and certainly for your whole family. So I'm sure you hear it many times every day, but let me just add one more. Thank you both, actually, for all you've done and all you continue to do, and God bless you. That said, it is with a sense of urgency that that we have this conversation today. You know, everyone saw the ship, the Ever Given, get stuck in the canal last week, and really sort of got the opportunity to observe physically. It was very emblematic of the way that our supply chains are being systematically brought to a halt. And this is the most recent example. You know, Texas grid going down was another. A lot of things falling out during the coronavirus nonsense. All of these things are just the systematic whittling away at our supply chains. And we're really starting to see a lot of this hit home. Rabobank put out a study. For years now, we've sort of been keeping an eye on the food supply, and I've been trying to keep track of how crop losses have been occurring, and it's sort of been underreported. And so there was a bit of finesse in trying to find this data and really surface it and bring people's attention to what's going on. But it's really pretty obvious at this point. You know, Rabobank, as I mentioned, just put out a report called Biblical Lean and Mean that pretty openly discusses the fact. In fact, it puts it all in the terms of Joseph and the 7 years of famine that he used central planning to try and get through there. And so they put this whole report out about the fact that we're now entering such a period where food stocks aren't available. Countries are taking steps to protect their domestic prices to try and feed their own people. And what that means is that international shipments of food get clogged up. They sort of slow down. The whole multinational, transnational trade of food is grinding to a halt right now. So this is something that we absolutely need to be paying attention to. And unfortunately, this isn't just a natural occurrence that, you know, the powers that be could help us through, could take steps to ensure that people are fed. It's more that they see an opportunity here, obviously, right? Never let a crisis go to waste. They see an opportunity here to capitalize that and to seize total control over the supply chain. And Steve, you nailed it on the head. The whole name of the game for them is to take everything about society. This is the transhumanist game, right? And food is a huge part of what makes us human. So the transhumanist agenda must separate us from that. Food is much more than just our sustenance. It's our culture. It's our history. You know, our holidays are around harvest dates. There's something very innate about cultivation and very important to humanity. And so this is a connection that they're to God, I would say, that they're absolutely severing right now. So we see, you know, as we see Jeff Bezos spending hundreds of billions of dollars investing in indoor vertical farms, we also see the USDA passing new regulations that require of all leafy greens, all food, that you need to have perfect GPS tracking of where each piece of lettuce comes from. So it's not just that they're standing up the alternative technological systems, it's that they're gradually making the case that traditional farming and ranching is dirty and dangerous and antiquated, and they're phasing it out. And it's impossible for a small farmer to have that kind of equipment on hand to keep track of the GPS location of every lettuce. Is obviously it's a ridiculous requirement, right? It speaks then to shutting down this old style of farming and replacing it with the synthetic farms. As in the same vein, we see Bill Gates investing tons of money into fake meat. This has been pretty popularly explored by now. And of course, he's out there saying we should all be eating synthetic meat in the first world countries. Well, in the background, we see states moving, like Colorado has something called the PAWS Act right now, which says if you're raising animals to make their lives better, we must let them reach one third of their natural lifespan. And this obviously throws a wrench in the way that most animal husbandry has worked since the beginning of time. You know, this is something that is makes humanity who we are. We raise animals, we use them on our farm, we use their manure as part of it, and to fertilize our crops. And you just see this systematic dismantling of the way that things have worked. For example, in Australia, they just reclassified manure as a toxic industrial byproduct. No longer can we take manure and fertilize our crops. It's just out of control. So yeah, the Colorado PAWS Act moves the goalpost of what is allowed when you're raising animals. Now you need to let.
Excuse me. If I need to interrupt you. You said manure has been classified as a toxic substance, yet in the Pacific Northwest, I think it's Oregon, they classified the human remains as a suitable substance for fertilization. Hey, listen, I admit, as much as I know about agri-farming, I learned from Green Acres, reruns. Okay, so, but what the heck, I guess, is my question. What the heck?
Right? Yeah. Okay. Huh is well said, Doug. A lot of these things that we're talking about today are so on their face, so ridiculous. It's almost unbelievable. And it's not until you really adjust the lens through which you view reality to understand that this is an absolutely complete takeover of food and food production. It is, you know, you already mentioned the quote, if you control food, you control people, from Kissinger. And that is exactly what's going on here. We also heard Bertrand Russell say it is a combination of diet, injections, and injunctions that will allow us to mold people into these little thoughtless things that we can control. And we're certainly seeing lots of injections going on right now, plenty of conversation there. So that's why I think the diet conversation is something that we need to be talking about right now, because it is in full force. And the good news, let me just briefly mention, the good news and the reason that they are attacking so blatantly, so aggressively food production and trying to criminalize our ability to have gardens and making us register our animals, all of this rapid move to do away with dirty and antiquated farming is because it's so easy to do. It's so prolific. When you actually have a small garden, you can get so many seeds out of that, which you can then turn around and give to your neighbors. And this is one area where it really would be possible for us to quickly gain traction and make a really meaningful difference in restoring, like I call it, a decentralized food system, one where we're all growing food. If I have a bad year, my neighbor is there with more seeds or more potatoes, whatever, to help me get through this year and then replant next year. This is the way it's always worked, right? Humanity has gotten through. If it were impossible to grow food, we wouldn't be where, you know, we wouldn't have made it this far. So that's why they are so quickly moving on this. And you hear statements from the folks over at the UN World Food Systems Summit right now about, just as it is with all of their sustainable development goals, the SDGs, now through 2030 is, they're calling it the decade of action. And they say we may even experience a bit of vertigo because things are changing so quickly. So they've telegraphed their intentions to just run this all through, to ram it through while people are still caught off guard. But again, food is one area where we can really quickly turn this around and make a meaningful difference.
Well, Steve, go ahead.
Well, I think too, Christian, one of the things that people have got to understand is all the shortages they see now were designed to basically put people into a psychological trauma, a solitary confinement, but also appetite, nutrition. There's a big difference in the God's nutrition versus the fake food people. And the fake food people obviously want everything controlled. And ladies and gentlemen, we already are hearing about the vaccines and the nanobots, nanotechnology. Nanotechnology is already being incorporated into food all over the world. And in essence, you know, Samsung, I think, what was it, almost 10 years ago, talked about smart dust, Christian, where they could literally spray a field and every single ear of corn or stalk of celery would have a unique identifier. You want to address that? Because, again, the idea of going to the store, and I said this to everybody, I said the term selection will cease to be relevant. You will not see selection. You will see an offering. The offering is take this or you take nothing. Will you address that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Part of the goal, and of course this ties into Agenda 2030, right, is the idea that we're going to track and trace all resources, all human activity, all economic activity everywhere on the planet at all times. And part of that is this assigning every – I mean there's a great piece about this from Business Insider where they – pretty unambiguously talk about the idea that we're going to have a new supply chain, one which affords blockchain and artificial intelligence and then 5G connectivity so that all of our coffee beans can talk to each other. And the article explores that when a coffee bean, when each individual coffee bean or whatever is harvested, it will be assigned its own ID so that we can then track and trace it through shipments and roasting and all of these processes. Be able to offer that fidelity of data on all these things. In fact, this speaks also to that FDA regulation. Like I said, they want to track every piece of lettuce. We want to know exactly the GPS coordinates from whence it came, when it was harvested, when it was cleaned, when it was packaged, everything. They want all the data, which is too much for normal farmers to take care of. In fact, there's a new ag tech center that's just gotten funded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. That talks about here's the technology. It's by a former Microsoft executive. Here's the technology we're bringing to the table. We're going to do indoor vertical farming. We're going to keep track of everything using artificial intelligence to watch the way it's growing and optimize the nutrient flows. It's completely artificial. And then we'll keep all this data on the blockchain. They're working with IBM to roll these things out. So yeah, complete awareness. They also talk, that same article also speaks to when a fish is caught, we're going to assign it a unique ID, and then if it's cut up into fillets, we're going to assign those IDs, we're going to track. It's astounding the level of data they want, complete awareness over everything on the planet. And of course, I did a report on this called Architecting the Beast System, because there's really no other way to describe what they're doing here as they stand up the perfect surveillance around us, integrate it with the social credit score, and then basically, you know, if you want meat, you're going to have to play nice, you're going to have to take your vaccines. And so the system, I think it's perfectly fair to call it the beast system, what they're standing up right now. So we mentioned that these billionaires are creating this fake food. They are, I would say, defiling all human sustenance from the fake meat to the indoor vertical farms. And you might say that, well, isn't this great? They're coming up with new – if there's food shortages, this would be a good thing. The problem is that they are doing it as part of this design to get rid of food and to enslave us through their fake meat. You know, if you're not allowed to grow your own food, then it means you have to take part. It's another stick in terms of carrot and stick. You now have to take part in that beast system just to feed your family. You have to comply with all the whatever the regulations of the day are to keep that social credit score high enough that you can go to the store and come home with some food. And we see multinational companies. It all flows down from the big think tanks and the UN, who've been talking for some time about how, well, we're going to have to give up meat. We're going to have to start eating insect-based protein. You know, this is the way of the future. And it's been, especially over this last year, since the pandemic, a lot of things really kicked into high gear. And then that's happened even more acceleration since Biden got in. But, you know, there was an agenda document called Rockefeller's Reset the Table Agenda, which speaks to the need to fundamentally transform the food system. And there's different forms of this in different parts of the world. In the EU, it's called farm to fork, recreating the food system. As I mentioned, the UN is hosting their World Food System Summit right now, where they're talking about a lot of these things. And all of these multinational companies are coming out and saying, yeah, me too. So Walmart has it's called the net zero. We don't want any carbon emissions to reach our shelves. And so if there's a product on the shelves at Walmart, you can rest assured within the next few years here, it basically won't have anything to do with nature. It won't have any carbon emissions associated with it. So that really rules out all natural animal products. I mean, it's called animal source food. None of that's going to be on the shelves anymore. It will have to come from these fake indoor vertical farms, these fake synthetic lab-grown meats, which they're calling clean meat, which is not only wrong, but it's an attempt to make the case, again, that traditional meat, that farming and ranching is dirty, it's pandemic-ridden. And it's astounding, Doug and Steve, the way that we see, you know, they continue to parrot the lie that this COVID came from a meat market, from bats, right? They want you to think that meat is now, it's just too risky. We couldn't do it anymore. After 2020, we had to give up animals altogether. And in fact, Russia came out with a vaccine a couple days ago for pets for COVID, saying that there's just too much of a risk of zoonotic transmission back and forth from animals, and it might keep our vaccines from working. So we're going to have to vaccinate your pets now. And you can see this very clearly falling in line with the narrative that they've already put out there for mink. We saw mink get COVID infections. And so Denmark went so far as to cull 17 million mink. And then they weren't even careful with the way they just dragged the bodies through the streets. So it had nothing to do with actually, you know, bioprotective measures. It was just creating this narrative that animals are pandemic ridden, that they're dirty and we have to cull them in huge numbers when there are problems. And I think it's very fair to expect that we'll see mass culls like this called for in livestock. In fact, Geert van den Bosch's letter that a lot of people are very excited about that. I viewed it with interest because here's a consummate vaccine insider saying that we need to stop the COVID vaccines. But when you read his letter, he goes on to say, of course, for one, he goes on to say that the solution is more vaccines. But then he specifically calls out that the way that these COVID vaccines are being rolled out right now heightens the risk that domestic livestock will be able to receive and transmit back, again, this zoonotic threat, the coronavirus. So it's if you, again, when you're viewing what's going on through that lens of a takeover of the food system, you can see a lot of these narratives being laid, and they're all sort of coming together rapidly right now to make the case that we need to do away with farming and ranching and take total control over the food supply. JBS, of course, is the world's biggest meat company. And a few months ago, they said, hey, me too. We're going to go net zero carbon emissions as well. And of course, that's because they want to keep their products on the shelves at Walmart. It would be difficult for them, given that they run these huge meat packing facilities, beef packing facilities, and a fleet of trucks to transport those products all over the place, to do things as they are now and reduce that carbon footprint. And that's why they're actually also investing, just like Tyson, just like all of the big meat companies who have over the last decades been systematically buying up all the family farms, right? All the small operations have been merged and acquired and shoved into Smithfield and Tyson. Smithfield now been sold to China, into these big meat companies who at the same time are using their money to invest in what they call alternative protein, this replacement agriculture, which is fake meat. So it's really astounding how quickly this is all moving forward.
So
now the problem.
Okay, the $2 trillion package that was just passed, or it was earmarked by Biden, is a Trojan horse for the Green New Deal, which is part of what you're addressing, if I'm not mistaken. Is that kind of so the relief package for the Communist Chinese Party virus in part covers or advances the agenda of the Green New Deal, which the Green New Deal is the umbrella of everything you're talking about? Is that a correct statement?
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to take you off track. I'm trying to connect the dots here with what I'm seeing, what other people are seeing, and that's just okay. Because if this, you know, if I didn't know you folks better, I'd say it's April Fool's Day, and what I'm hearing is not even, it doesn't even I can't comprehend this, but okay. Just wow. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I appreciate that because you're exactly right. It's just inconceivable and ridiculous what's going on. And it would be laughable if it weren't actually being executed by the people that have pretty effective control over the globe right now. And so, but again, when you start to see things through the idea of this complete takeover of food, then all of these things fall in the perfect place. The executive orders that the Biden-Harris administration rammed down, even during their first week, it was astounding. You saw the 30-30 deal, which puts 30% of the U.S. land and 30% of the U.S. waters into conservation. And that isn't just, you know, bigger national parks. It's literally they're taking the money that the Trump administration used to give farm support payments in there. Now, repurposing that instead to buy out farmers, to make them stop farming food. This is going on around the world. In the UK, there was a study from the University of Sheffield that said sheep farmers could make more money. They could profit if they would just stop farming sheep, if they would instead just plant some trees and then collect the carbon offsets that we're willing to pay them. Now, that makes no economic sense whatsoever for money to change hands, but no goods being produced. It's only in a system that's run by technocrats where they can game things in whatever way they want to provide the incentives, in this case the monetary incentives, to get the outcome they want, which is stop producing food. We're going to give you money. You're going to stop growing food. It is. So I appreciate that, Doug. It's completely ridiculous. Wow. Yeah, another thing that that the Biden-Harris administration did was this coronavirus relief bill, the Chinese virus relief bill, as you put it, paid out all USDA loans to socially disadvantaged farmers, basically to minority farmers. So not only did they paid them out at 120%. So not only did they forgive their debt, but then they just gave them some money on the side, you know, because you're black. And so obviously this is fueling also the racial division and trying to engineer a race war. It's a classic communist technique. You see, it's very much like the South Africa playbook. And it's really appalling. They have – it's not a one-off thing either. The USDA just appointed someone who is one of the – now the deputy heads of the USDA is chiefly focused on creating a racially equitable food system, whatever that means, right? We all eat every day. I can't believe that the idea of skin color plays into this all at all. We all eat. We all bleed red. We're all God's children. But somehow, because this is – it's a tried and true communist method here – they're engineering racial division. They're talking about, in fact, this was in the Rockefeller's Reset the Table document that that now the Biden administration is just playing out that playbook, that the idea that we need a racially equitable food system. So it's pretty stunning.
Steve,
I want to say something.
Wow, go ahead, brother.
Hey, Doug.
Go ahead.
Christian's talking about the Rockefeller plan. This is the same thing that the Deagle report, which the Deagle report was finally tied to John Deagle, who was a big-time Rockefeller fellow who basically wants to kill. Now, I think this is what people have got to understand. The Extinction Protocol, based on the Georgia Guidestones, but even a lot of their other stuff, maintained the Earth's population of 500 million. Right now it's 7.9 billion. 7.4 billion people have to die. But at the heart of everything is the fact that these entities, and I believe they're entities, hate God. They hate his creation. They poison the air. They poison the water. They poison the land. They poison our food. And right now they're going for the total, what somebody called the whole Megillah. They're going for the depopulation of planet Earth and of the United States of 250 million people between now and 2025. So I think what's interesting, because Christian, with your background in AI, and, you know, the advanced technology that's out there, we are being systematically executed at a genetic level. I don't think anybody's ever put it that way, but I will put it that way. We're choosing synthetic substitution for God's reality. We are living in a virtual famine because, again, God created us. They want to recreate us. They want to adjust our attitudes, aptitudes, and even our perceptions. But I think at the end of the day, people have got to understand, if you don't start applying, I would call this extinction level protocol counter moves, there's going to be no food. It's like Christian said, this is the beast system. And they're not forcing you right now to take it, but they're coercing you. That's their word, coerce. And so, Christian, would you just share, too, how you see the coercion factor playing out? Because, look, it doesn't say, well, we're not going to make you take the mark, but, oh, by the way, you can't pay your mortgage, you can't pay your taxes, you can't go to the grocery store, you can't go to the doctor, can't go to the dentist, can't. Well, that's pretty much forcing. So all the externals are coming upon the individual families in the United States and the world. And it's essence, we bow our knee or we die. Now, that's in their economy, not in God's economy. So will you address that, please, just the fact that this is at the root, not just the fruit, but the root of the problem. They are looking for human extinction, and they're accelerating it. Will you go ahead and take that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the Chinese social credit score, which if you criticize the Chinese Communist Party, your score is reduced, and that means you're not afforded a better priority boarding on the train. It affects the way you get to live, how many children you're allowed to. You know, this ties into a lot of things. It's not just in China, though. What we need to realize, what everyone needs to realize, is that in Germany, this has already started going live. You know, there was a story just a few days ago about a young woman who was on a train in previous weeks without a mask, and some camera noticed it and sent her a notification that said, you're not going to be allowed to ride the train for the next 6 weeks here. So this isn't some Chinese of those poor people suffering under, you know, Chinese communism. This is going global, and they're tracking these things. We have a perfect surveillance system surveilled from above by the climate tracing initiative, not contact tracing, but climate tracing, which was the Al Gore project to marry data from all of these satellites. They're already up there, already looking at emissions data, but now putting it all together in real time so that they can track anyone who's running an extra smokestack or has too many cow farts or you're raising too many plants. They can now see this in real time from these satellites and go respond to these things in real time. We're being surveilled from above by those. We're being surveilled by from underneath, from below, by the biobots, which are these little detectors that they've deployed into the sewage to keep track of. Actually, if you read the document about the biobots, it mentions we can track human dietary trends as well as epidemiological outbreaks and disease progressions and things like this. So surveilled from above, surveilled from below, everything on the blockchain. It's astounding how much data they're putting together on us. And Steve, to your point, yes, this is absolutely to be a coercive thing here, to force your participation. There will be a divergence between the people that are just willing to go along with these things and then the rest of us. And those of us who continue to grow our own food, this will be black market food at that point. You know, if it didn't come from the FDA-approved GPS-tagged lettuce from indoor robotic-driven farms, then it's illegal. It's a black market thing. And we already see, it's astounding and concerning, gentlemen, to see, sitting California Senators Richard Pan say that all of these vaccine extremists are domestic terrorists. So the language, it's not speculative at all to say this. This is already out there that they are making us, anyone who doesn't go along completely with the agenda, they're quite literally shoving down our throats into violent extremist terrorists. In fact, they're lumping us in with QAnon. It's quite clever and devious what's going on here. But yeah, all of this speaks to turning us into a class of different people who do things differently, who are black market, who shouldn't be trusted, and who are dangerous. We are dirty and dangerous, just like the animals they're trying to make outlawed right now. I also wanted to mention, yes, also, Steve, I think, it's right there in Genesis 3:19, by the sweat of your brow you shall eat. And so there's something already questionable about the supermarket, these multicolored assortments of foods that you can take without sweating on your brow, right? With very easily. And I think that's why it is being used as a vector for what is ultimately this satanic agenda to defile the food. And if you put your, it's already the case. You go to the grocery store, it's impossible to find anything that doesn't have soy oil in it or crazy colors, and you know, it's our food system has had problems. GMO, right? Our food system has been under attack for many years now, but it's really turning into something else now, where it's turned into a synthetic artificial food. And I also wanted to put a little bit of historical context on this. After the first few years of a Soviet grains crisis, Joseph Stalin himself got up in front of the Institute of Red Professors, and I just want to read a quote from that talk that he gave. He said that the underlying cause of our grain difficulties is that, you know, we have too many people. It's the same sort of thing. Oh, it's overpopulation. There's too many people. You hear this today. And Stalin went on to say, what is the way out of this grains crisis, out of the situation? The way out lies, firstly, in the transition from the small, backward, scattered peasant farms. We're going to do away with traditional farming and ranching. It's dirty and antiquated. And into, continued Stalin, amalgamated, large-scale, socialized farms equipped with machinery and armed with scientific knowledge, capable of producing a maximum of grain for the market. The solution lies then in the transition from individual peasant farming into collective, socialized farming. And guys, this is exactly what's going on now. It's the same communist playbook. We're going to do away with people who can grow their own food. That's dirty and antiquated. And we're going to move to new, socialized, collectivized farms empowered by science and technology, right? We're going to do a communism right this time. It's always those same principles that this time we know better and we're going to be able to pull it off. And that's what they're doing when they're unveiling this fake food. We're going to do away with farming and ranching. It's just, it's amazing the extent to which this mirrors. That's almost 100 years ago. And it's almost the exact same verbiage. So yeah, we've got these, we'll put some big, for the radio listeners, some big air quotes around the idea of billionaire philanthropists here, but they are putting a lot of their resources into fake meat and these nasty foods. The problem though is that people just don't want to eat it. It's disgusting. In fact, they did a survey of Gen Z people even. You know, even the younger folks are saying, I don't want lab-grown meat. That's really not my style. And so they need then to engineer some crisis that that makes the case that we have to move to these things. People don't want to go eat fake meat and reconstituted DNA from extinct animals. There's actually a company, you know, one of the World Economic Forum profile companies is actually looking for DNA. They're building a DNA library of different animals that are exotic animals that we can't really eat right now because animal rights and things. But if they were all test tube grown, lab grown meat, then we can use CRISPR technologies to merge, you know, flamingo with woolly mammoth or some ungodly combination of things that would have a great new taste, a novel kind of food is the way they describe it. We're going to invent new foods. So it's appalling. The problem though is that people don't want it. So they are now engineering food shortages, and this is why they're attacking the supply chain relentlessly to make people feel that there's a problem. This is, of course, the first part of that problem reaction solution, the Hegelian dialectic, where they're going to make it so that you go to the store and you see those empty shelves and you feel scared. And so you're willing then to accept these fake meats. That is happening right now. We've seen over the last few years, the USDA has been chronically overstating levels of production. And it's really, you know, I've had interviews with some of the top 1% farmers who are saying, you know, there's something going on here, Christian, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know the USDA is lying. They're trying to get people to feel like there's not a problem here, but we are, they would say in no unambiguous terms, we're below pipeline levels. We're burning through more food than we're growing at this point. And there's a day of reckoning ahead, and we're approaching that day. What do you think about that, Steve?
Well, I think that we're at such a crisis point, Christian and Doug, that given the, even the, let me just give you a good example. With the food chain in the United States as it is, and the military now literally looking like we're headed into war with Ukraine and Russia, as you and I and Doug are, you know, on this program tonight, and tonight, we don't even know what tomorrow will bring. But here's the thing. If there is a war that breaks out, then everything that's in the commercial sector, the public sector, is going to have some kind of a war protocol put on it. And what was available will not be available. And it's getting so bad that the main bridge, and this is important because food is a weapon. We know that. We've quoted, everybody quotes Kissinger on that. But the bottom line is the whole issue of oil. Now, here's something interesting, you guys. The food and the food production capabilities of Russia, they have record yield crops, Russia can feed their people. And Christian, I want to ask you this. Based on what you see, based on all the livestock that was destroyed, all the land for whatever reason that has been pretty much rendered useless, whether it was too much water or too cold or the growing season interrupted, this is a big thing in dealing with war policy. The fact that you can feed your army is a big deal. So when you take in all of the variables, weather, okay, and not global warming, I call it global lying, okay, but global warming, geoengineering, everything that's going on, in if you had to say, and look, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but just when do you see the point of maximum impact affecting total empty shelves in the United States of America?
All right, folks, I apologize for that little blip that you experienced. We're back live. We've got gremlins in the system, and this is perhaps one of the most important conversations I've heard this Amen. Year. And I got to say that if you might as well say this now and then let Ice Age Farmer and Steve go on, if what you are hearing is resonating with you, go to gensix.com. In fact, it'll be in the program description box and sign up for the conference because the virtual conference, because this information is just the tip of the iceberg. And also follow Ice Age Farmer. Okay. IceAgeFarmer.com. The information here that I'm listening to. And I told Steve during the blip and, Christian that, you know, I don't want to even interject myself anymore because that would just dumb down the conversation. So with that, and I apologize again, Ice Age Farmer was speaking, had a frog in his, throat, not really in the background, but, nonetheless, he can continue. So go ahead, sir, and continue if you recall where you're at. And if not, just take it in any direction.
Sure. So Steve had asked, what's the timeline here, Christian? And I would say that, you know, it's there are already lots of analysts and traders out there who have been concerned about these grain shortages. The words global protein shortage and now global grains crisis are out there. This is in the vocabulary. It's not a conspiracy theorist on YouTube talking about it anymore. And you do see these things hitting home. While it's not in the news on the front page, hey, you should be worried about food, they sort of don't want people to know about that. But you can discern it by looking at the sort of acts that nation states are taking right now. In fact, there's a great piece called it was a headline, "Other countries are taking steps to protect their food supply. Are we?" And the short answer is we're not. We've been selling our food supplies hand over fist to China at record levels. And when I say record levels, I mean there was a series of purchases over a single week that eclipsed every previous year in recorded history of how much corn China was growing. And this is absolutely something I call food wars, because they are absolutely extracting the substance of our nation, and they have been for some time. Even under Trump, this is not a partisan issue. Under Bush 1, right before Obama came in, we liquidated our strategic grain reserves. So whereas most countries keep some grains on hand so that in the event of food shortages, they have something to draw upon, those were liquidated and turned into cash, and they're gone now. You can look at our frozen meat stacks. And during 2020, when COVID caused major meat packers to shut down, we just started. The only reason there were not shortages of meat at the store, and in some cases there were, in fact, some fast food places didn't have meat for a bit there, so it was a bit visible. But the only reason that there was still meat on the shelves at all was by virtue of these frozen meat stocks. And you can see that reflected in the USDA's own reports, where there's just this precipitous drop off in frozen meat stocks last year as we ate into that buffer. And so that means that we don't have that, you know, that food savings account to draw upon now. And so further interruptions like we continue to experience are, yes, going to manifest in visible shortages at the store. And that's what they want. They want people to see it, to experience it, so that when they say, we've got to do away with farming and ranching and move to Bill Gates meat, people say, I guess you're right, because there's no meat on the shelves otherwise. So again, other things that you can see happening are countries taking steps, like I said, to protect their own food supplies. We saw Brazil and Argentina and Russia and Ukraine. And these are the major, you know, I'm not talking about some small countries who are you know, touch and go. They were net importers anyway, and now they're just trying to. No, these were the breadbaskets. These are the major producers of food in the world that then in turn export it to everyone else, and of course the U.S. among them. Other than the U.S., each of the ones I enumerated just now, Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, Russia, have taken steps to at least cap the amount of food that they are exporting now, which means that all the importing countries don't have anywhere to get their food. So this is the, as I said at the very top, this is the multinational system of food moving to where it's needed most, grinding to a halt. And if you look at the news releases from, for example, Argentina, where there's a huge beef industry, right? Argentine steaks. They are very unambiguous. The reason they're stopping the exports of corn and soybeans is to be able to feed their own livestock domestically. And Russia and Ukraine used the same thing. It was the Association of Ukraine Livestock Producers that petitioned their ag czar to stop the exports. And at first he said, no, I don't think so. But ultimately they won and they said, we need to feed our animals. And so you need to stop exporting our food. And they did. They put caps on how much grains they're exporting now. The U.S. is the sole exception. We have just been sending, like I said, record levels of grains, corn, soybeans over to China. China's more than happy to take all of it off of our hands. And it's very concerning to see that there's just no one in the United States that's worried at all about protecting either our livestock. After all, there's a war on meat. And so letting feed prices explode through the roof is part of that. It's part of that game. So they're protecting neither our livestock, nor for that matter, are they protecting our people, right? We need to feed our people as well. And so food prices are exploding. Feed prices are exploding. Because of the grain shortages, we've seen, in fact, both China has started to reformulate what is allowed to go in animal feed. They're now sort of loosening their restrictions so that you can feed animals other grains, wheat now. They're buying up all the wheat and feeding that to their animals, not traditionally fed to animals. And then even in the U.S., there's now something called the Feed Act, where usually if a farmer collects crop insurance after a weather problem, like you mentioned, Steve, then they get the payout and then they let their field lay fallow for the rest of that season. At this point, they're starting to say, maybe you can go ahead and plant some cover crop or something that will be able to feed your animals as well. So, and that's a bipartisan effort. And whenever you see, especially at this point, to see Democrats and Republicans in Congress collaborating on anything, I think it's pretty insightful. There's absolutely an awareness, even within the markets, but definitely at the nation state level, that we're in a global food shortage, and they're taking steps, again, except for the U.S. mostly, to try and protect against that. And I also want to mention that this, just as the COVID nonsense played out the script of Event 201, there was an event that was sponsored by George Soros that was run by John Podesta-run Council for America Progress that was called the Food Chain Reaction Game. It was hosted in 2015, and it foresaw, it predicted, it's one of these tabletop exercises where they war game. Well, what if this happened? It foresaw a future in 2020 where, because of global warming and a pandemic, food production had significant problems and the supply chains were interrupted. Pesky nations started taking steps to protect their food supply, and those pesky nationalists, you know, they're always part of the problem. And the Food Chain Reaction Game predicted that there would be huge problems, that people would die, that food prices would explode, that there would be extensive geopolitical risk due to the instability due to rising food prices. Of course, these two things are very tightly correlated, more so than anything. If food prices explode, you saw this with the Arab Spring, right? When bread prices exploded, and that's when people went out into the streets and really lost their cool. So this Food Chain Reaction Game basically spelled out exactly the scenario that we're going through. And of course, the conclusions of that, much like any of the globalist tabletop exercises, were that we needed to prevent nations from acting in their own interest. We need to make sure that the food keeps flowing to all the nations that need it. So more international cooperation, more global governments to ensure that that happens. And then a global carbon tax was the other thing that came out of the Food Chain Reaction Game. So this is, you know, I think very clearly this is part of the script that they have been planning for a long time now. And unfortunately, we find ourselves walking through it now.
If we were to experience another plandemic, this time with Ebola, how long, Christian, do you believe it would take for the shelves to be totally empty? Now, the reason I'm asking that, this isn't a pie in the sky hypothetical. We've got multiple reports coming from multiple states, even actual cases now of Ebola in Kentucky. But the cover-up is really critical. Given the short supply of everything now, how long? Because here, it's my contention that all the FEMA camps, when everybody's starving, that's how they're going to get people to walk into them. Men here, women here, children here. And we all know what they do to children. How long would you guess it would take? Now, again, let me just share this. I'm not hypothecating. I really have information in that realm that they will go for a second shutdown. And the people, their exact words, this is the haters of God, the haters of humanity, people will beg us for an MRE. That's from a really arrogant source, not to me, but through someone else. So if we're seeing now the failure of the party line, and I mean Communist Party line, of to, you know, scare us all into vaccination, scare us all into this, that, the other thing. They've destroyed, in my opinion, the middle class financially. They've destroyed the restaurant and hospitality business. What are your thoughts? You know, and because, you know the food situation, I think this is critical, because what trying to get people to understand is not enough just to have, you know, canned soup and dehydrated stuff. You've got to learn to grow stuff, even if it's sprouts, even if it's vertical farming, even if it's aquaponics, hydroponics. But how long would you, and listen, I'm not asking you to, you know, to but a researched opinion, okay? That's a good way of putting it. Based on that, we get the word that Ebola has broken out in the United States, and now you see the government starting to use their fear and loathing. They fear the truth, and they loathe us, okay? So the bottom line is, what would you guess? What would you estimate?
It's hard to put a date on that. You know, I think, and it may not even be Ebola. It may not take another pandemic. We're starting to see gasoline shortages falling out of the Texas refineries shutting down, many of which are still not operating. We're absolutely seeing plastic shortages, which in turn is informing lots of companies, including food producers, like a dairy has been declaring force majeure. We're not able to deliver you your milk, and we have our farmers dumping their milk because we don't have the plastic resin needed to make milk containers. I mean, it's painful to realize that that's how precarious the system is that feeds many people around the world, but that's where we are right now. So it may not even need a huge precipitating event like a second outbreak to just push the supply chain that much further into, I mean, it's already dysfunctional and way behind. I think there's going to be real effects from the shipping challenges, which is another, you know, I should mention shipping is another thing that actually, if you look at there's a document called Absolute Zero, which describes the changes as we experience vertigo, right, in this decade of action, the changes they plan to make, shutting down beef by 50% by 2030 and then completely by 2050. But shipping is on that list too, because these ships burn gasoline and oil. So shipping is supposed to be shut down completely by 2050. This is another reason that they needed to attack it and point at it and say, this is not a good system going forward. We're going to shut it down. So I think, yeah, I would expect that the empty shelves syndrome would be first manifesting for meat, because that's really what they want to shut down. There's absolutely a war on meat. They want people to see that and be pushed over into fake meat. And they've started introducing these hybrid products that are like half pea protein and half beef to sort of get people used to that, to start acclimating to that. And then when there's more pronounced beef shortages, they can say, maybe we'll ease you into it with this half beef, half pea protein. And then ultimately you'll have to go to the synthetic meat. But generally with commodities and staple commodities like this, it's not that, you know, the answer I get, Steve, when I ask that question is, Christian, we never run out of soybeans. We just run out of $8 soybeans. And then we run out of $10 soybeans. And then we run out of $14 soybeans. And so there's something called price rationing, where people just at some point, I can't afford those soybeans. And I go off, like I said, I go off to reformulate my animal feed using wheat now. So we're already seeing the prices of reaching these levels where people are looking for alternatives to substitute out. And and food prices are rising. That's why Rabobank said we're already at 7-year highs for most of these staple commodities. And another thing that we can look at here with food prices rising like this is why last year a lot of cities started stocking up food banks literally to the rafters. You saw this happening in Detroit where they filled up their, you know, there's no sports games going on, so they filled up their stadium with these huge, they're calling them pandemic pallets, pallets of foodstuffs, so that as food prices go through this explosion and people are unable to feed themselves, that they come in, whether it's to the FEMA camps or and show their vaccination ID. You can absolutely imagine that this ties in with the rest of the agendas here, that they more and more people are shoehorned into the state to feed them. So, yeah, I think it's happening now, and it's happening quickly.
Doug?
Keep going, Steve and Christian. IceAgeFarmer.com. IceAgeFarmer.com. Folks, you're going to need to really bookmark that website. Follow Christian all across the internet. Listen to what he's saying. And by all means, he's going to be one of the keynote speakers at Extinction Protocols. Make sure you go to Gen6.com. There it is on your screen for those watching, for those listening, Gen6.com. Purchase Extinction Protocols 2021 live, streaming, video on demand. It's very inexpensive. Plus, if you pre-order your Extinction Protocols 2021 conference DVD, you can get a little gift. And I would take advantage of that because, at the rate things are going, you might, Steve might be paying you almost. I'm joking, of course, but there it is. If you like what you hear, and I suspect you do, the level of information here is, in my view, second to none. I would put this broadcast up against anything, anywhere, because of the quality of information you're getting. So please, Gen6.com, it's really a requirement, in my view. So there you go. Steve, go ahead, sir.
Well, I think what, you know, look, we know in the Bible what a man will sell just for his pottage, as obviously Esau sold his birthright. But what's tragic when you understand the great famines in history, the byproduct of war, of what happens to the children, what happens to women. And look, you guys, I don't like to even entertain this stuff, but we got to break out of the realm of Never Never Land. Women sell their bodies for a can of sea rations that happened after World War II. The stories, what people would do to flee from communism. People who have fled from communism now are saying, where do we go now? Because the whole world is going after the beast. And I think what you're hearing from Christian today is so, how do I say this? It's the ultimate issue. Go 3 days without food. Listen to your stomach. And maybe your stomach will tell you what your ears refuse to hear. So Christian, again, the United Nothings, you know, I hold them in total contempt. They are absolutely an obscenity on the earth. Those are my words, not Christians. But they want to control what we eat. There was a worm NATO. I don't know if you saw that. A cyclonic group of worms that were swirling. It looked literally like a, you know, a whirlpool of worms. I thought, God, please send that to New York City, to the United Nations ground. So, and then a voice from heaven could say, now you guys get to eat what you're telling my people to eat. You know, again, God will feed his people. But if God's people don't listen, and remember, everybody, God's people had to be led out of a time of famine. The promised land was flowing with milk and honey. Everything was drying and blowing away. So I think, Christian, that even if we understand, and you've made it clear that it is probably, in essence, there's nothing more important than what we're talking about today. And how do you break through the fog of apathy and indifference? Because you're on a lot of radio programs, you have your own podcasts, etc. But how do you break through that? Because you're a young man, and I go, Lord, help him to break through, because it's like there are ears and they don't hear. There are eyes and they don't see. If there was one, if you could, and I'm not trying to sink you down or link you down to one provocative statement, I want, if you could, to express to people the absolute, this almost sounds like an oxymoron on my part, but the necessity, there's probably nothing more important. Forget going on a cruise ship, which you'll come down with some disease anyway, if it breaks out. But how would you say it? How do you put into focus the extreme importance of this. If it's apathy and indifference, you can't overcome. I'm hoping you can't overcome it. I don't know that I have been able to in people's lives.
It's an important question. I think the degree to which these things have become more and more obvious and more extreme has helped, right? I think some ears that didn't seem to hear before have come online, especially during the pandemic. A lot of people have I don't want to use the expression woken up, but have become more receptive to these things. And at the same time, Steve, there are also, as you say, there are eyes that just don't see and ears that won't hear. And I don't spend a lot of time on them. I pray for them. I hope that they come around, that something happens in their life to precipitate. It's an internal switch that they have to flip, that then they'll start looking at this and sort of seeing what's going on. But, it's as if they've been ossified and nothing I can say. I think nothing we can say can reach those people for now. And that's, the Bible talks about that. There are some people that aren't going to be on board here at the end. So, I've tried to be all right with that. And then focus on those people who are willing to listen and who just need to be armed with a bit more information, and then start working on growing food.
And those are the people we're talking to right now. I didn't, I interrupted you. I just want to let Steve and Christian, IceAgeFarmer.com, Steve Quayle, SteveQuayle.com, Gen6.com. We're at the top of the hour. Folks are listening to the Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network, as well as on Rumble and Brighteon. For your visual pleasure. Now, having said that, Steve, I'm going to kick it back to you. I don't know the arrangement with respect to what you've done.
Christian, here's the thing. I had asked you to stay on an hour. Do you want to stay on the second hour, or would you like to take your leave and liberty? Because here's the deal. Number one, thank you. Number two, outstanding. Number three, for such a time as this, has your voice been raised for this time? You said something important. You said a switch has to turn on in their head. Do you believe after the scamdemic, that more people's switches are turning on? Or do you think with as many switches that are turning on, co-equally are people tuning out to the reality of it? In other words, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be happy to continue speaking for one.
Okay.
And I do think that, yes, I think absolutely, right? And we need not even wonder about this, because if they had already won, they would not need to censor broadcasts like this one. They wouldn't be taking away my Twitter. Their censorship push for control of the narrative is so determined right now that I think that betrays that they're losing some of that battle for the narrative. So I do believe that there's a rising tide of humanity, and it is to they that we are speaking right now.
What can the average person begin to do? They say, like, the switch goes on, and my prayer, and Doug, thank you for, again, giving us this platform. No more important broadcast than this, podcast than this. What can the average person do to start to take a little bit of their life back and break their dependency? I mean, we know green, is good. Obviously the vegetables we can grow in gardens, hydroponics. I heard you say about your frog. Are you doing like what's the name of the word where you put everything in its own little ecosystem?
The aquaponics system.
Aquaponics. Yeah. Thank you. So someone says, Christian, I get it. But what do I do, especially on limited incomes? I mean, sprouting seeds, and that's my next question. Are there still seed available, supplies of seeds available for people to begin to sprout or to plant or to do whatever?
Yeah, so it may seem counterintuitive that the answer to encroaching global tyranny is to go outside and get your hands dirty in the garden. But I genuinely believe that that is one of the most important ways that we take back up our power. Based both on the fact that, like I said earlier, that they're attacking it so whole-hoggedly, so to speak, but also because that it is by virtue of our depending on this system that they have power over us. And so to take back our power, we must become more self-sufficient. And so for years, my message has been start growing food, start raising animals. And I need to augment that now in light of the fact that they're trying to regulate out of existence traditional farming and ranching. They're saying that you can't grow your own food. They're trying to make, you know, I think this is what you were alluding to there, Steve. They're actually making saving of seeds and trading seeds more and more difficult and gradually illegal. You can see this in the Chinese mystery seeds. I will call it a PSYOP that happened, a false flag of seeds last year, where they said, you know, these seeds are dangerous. They could be poisoned and you shouldn't plant seeds unless they come from an authorized source. And this is them making the case that if you didn't get your food, or at this point, if you don't get our seeds from, you know, Syngenta and Monsanto, these seed companies that over generations, they've been just like with the Tyson and JBS acquiring all of the small farms, they're doing the same thing on the genetics side because they want control over God's genetics. They want to take control over that. So saving your own seeds from the crops that you grow is a huge, it's a weapon. It's a huge part of reclaiming our sovereignty. There's also just briefly I'll mention that plants actually learn. When you save seeds from plants you've grown, they have encoded within them more knowledge about the conditions where you grew them, which means the second year you grow that same crop, it's going to do much better where you are. It's going to be bespoke for, it's called a land race when you grow a crop in the same place over and over and it sort of develops to your microclimate. So it's not just a better way of growing food. This is how we keep our power. And so I want to augment the grow food, raise animals message with, we have to push back against these efforts to criminalize animals and to register your chickens. You know, the UK is going door to door gassing chickens, talking about how it's always in the name of public safety, right? Because there's a bird flu outbreak. This just happened again a couple days ago. There's a new one somewhere else in the UK. It was in Kent before. I forget where it is now. But they've drawn a big circle around it, like a 1 kilometer zone and then a 10 kilometer zone. And they're going door to door gassing people's chickens to keep this bird flu outbreak from spreading. I could not believe it when I got multiple reports. So it was pretty clear that it was actually happening, not just some random troll. But it was so, again, some of these things are so over the top, so ridiculous that I put in a FOIA request with the UK government. I said, are you doing that? Are you killing people's chickens? Please tell me why. What are the epidemiological protocols you're following and on what basis and what zones? And they wrote back and they just referred me to their, you know, some document on some .UK site that says in the bird flu outbreak, here's how we're going to handle it. And they said, we're just following orders. Yes, we are. So that just following orders mentality is strong right now. But it's against these things that we have to push back. It cannot be illegal for us to keep animals. It cannot be illegal for us to grow food. And so I've started something called the Greater Food Alliance just to encode that idea and to make sure that where there are farmers markets being shut down because of COVID, and you can petition if you have a problem with this, but that department's closed because of COVID, where there are people's chickens being killed off for public safety reasons, where they are taking livestock away and making you register your livestock or even your beehives. It's just amazing how intrusive these things are, that I can align producers or people, homesteaders, anyone that's being affected by this excessive regulatory and legislative overreach with attorneys or other people who are willing to go to bat, right, for these producers and make sure that we defend our right to farm. And it's worth mentioning there are some rays of light. Wyoming passed a bill to make sure that in the early days of the pandemic, when the meat processing facilities were shut down, they carved out a special exception that said, it's not acceptable to have cows being slaughtered and then not going to market when we've got hungry people over here just because the FDA regulators aren't here. And so they carved out a special exception that said, if it's a direct sale from the producer right to the consumer, then we can obviate the need for the USDA's inspection process here. And that's fantastic, right? Let's get the federal government out of our way. We're growing food. We're feeding our families and our communities. And again, that's what we need to be doing. Florida has a bill as well. And Illinois just has one proposed right now. It's not yet passed. But again, I'm looking for signs of good things here, progress in the other direction. And there is a rising tide of people, especially, again, this goes to your question, Steve. Are people, Are they seeing this? Are they opening their eyes? Some are, and some are seeing that our food security is at risk here. And so the Florida bill, which did pass, and the Illinois bill, which I hope passes, but they both say at the state level, they're like, hey, to homeowners associations or to cities that say you're not allowed to garden in your front yard because it affects property values, like, no, you can't do that. Growing food is a basic human right, a natural right, and you're not allowed to regulate that out. So so the Greater Food Alliance then is there to look at stuff like this and make sure that I can publish it and that we can arm all the other states with examples of how you, you know, templates of laws that will protect individuals' rights to grow food. Because we can't just grow our own food and hope for the best right now or hide in the forest, because they're, I mean, it's clear they're advancing on all fronts, criminalizing growing food and raising animals. So we have to fight back at that level too.
Is there any type of directory, or would there be support? I'd throw some money in to try and get it, of ranchers and farmers that will sell direct to people. And I've been telling everybody, Christian, you know, I've been on the Farm Aid bandwagon since I started on talk radio 25 years ago, but it is so critical. Would a national directory in states that have that help, or would it hurt? Would it be giving the enemy too much ammo to come against those people? In essence, you know, I believe it was a hog farmer in Iowa, maybe, that was selling his hogs directly to the people. He had a slaughterhouse and everything, and people were keeping that farmer alive, and he didn't rape people. He kept his same pricing structure, and he stayed alive. Is there anything like that that would be effective, or would it be immediately countermanded by the evil one to basically make that illegal too?
There are certainly some websites. A great question, Steve. And I've thought a lot about this. There are some sites. I think Local Fresh is one, and there are others that can help you find producers in your local area and go connect with them directly. Whether those are, you know, CSA style things, or, you know, meat animal shares, where you sort of buy at the beginning of the season, you buy a share in the cow or a share in the goat, and then throughout the season they give you milk deliveries. These are ways to get around raw milk deliveries. These are ways to get around some of those regulations. When you actually own part of the animal, then, you know, there's no ability for them to regulate at that point some of those products. But just to step back on that question, I think it's even more important. This is where I would say it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us working together. Whatever your background is, if you're already growing food, that's great, and that's something we all can be doing. But if you are a computer guy, then there is a huge need, like Steve just said, of people out there, farmers and ranchers, who are not exactly, in some cases, technically savvy, but who've been disconnected from their market, right? Because the restaurants got shut down, or the school lunches got shut down, and this is why we saw tons of milk being dumped. People lost their market. And so there's a need for you, as a guy who can stand up a website with a shopping cart and merchant services, to go find these producers and enable them to connect with consumers in the local area. Or maybe it's not a website. There's a need for lawyers, like I said, to help fight some of these regulations. Whatever your background is, I promise you, we need you right now. Your unique background, your unique experiences, all of us are needed to come to the table right now and make sure that we can continue feeding our communities going forward. So I think it's a distributed. That's why I really emphasize that decentralized aspect. They want total control, and they want to centralize everything. But it's going to take all of us working against that trend to make sure that that we have a decentralized food system. And that's the most robust form, right? When there's not one directory that needs to get shut down, there's all of us. It's really hard for them to come shut us all down at the same time. So I think that'd be my answer.
And that's a great answer, Doug. That's really a neat service that, you know, those of us who have platforms and those of us who have, you know, major websites can offer that. And again, you know what, Christian, you said something that really hits a note with Doug and I. We have been looking for really lawyers that will stand up and take on the man. Now in this environment, though, because of what we saw, this isn't a political statement, but there's not a favorable court system or judicial due process any longer. So I would say that this thing has to be handled, how should I say this, on a, your word, organic level. It needs to be a spontaneous uprising, and here's what I'm saying, with dirt. You got to love dirt. You're made of this stuff. I'm made of this stuff. God breathed into this lump of clay the breath of life. But, you know, isn't it interesting? You know, these people brag, and I've written about, and this is important, singularity, transhumanism, genetic Armageddon, all this stuff for 25 years, okay, and now it's there. But, you know, it's like the joke. These guys are bragging. And just like the head of one of the major pharmaceutical companies said, we can do anything to the human genome now we have. And he said, basically, we've become God. And I wish the Lord would have literally sounded from heaven. That guy will get his, but, and said, get your own dirt, you know? I mean, everything. And here's what we're seeing. We're seeing a carboniferous life form, and we're carbon-based, okay? Yet replaced by a demonically inspired synthetic life base since, okay? Everything that's synthetic is anti-God. It is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a Luddite, but I can tell you this. I really like what God made, like the blue sky. I hate the chemtrail sky. Look at what, you know, everything that's going on. But I think this is important, ladies and gentlemen. And are there seed, and I used to be in the survival business, you know, that was one of the guys that started it, but are there seed companies that are still available to give people non-hybrid seeds, you know, heirloom seeds? Are they still there? Because I would think this, that most people need to, and you said something, there was a time when seeds were barter. I believe there'll be a time coming again where seeds are barter. And so is there, and look, it's just for people's knowledge, what are the seed companies you think that are out there that really do a good job?
Yeah, thanks for coming back to that. I neglected to mention that, yes, you can still get seeds. There are seed shortages, and a lot of seed companies have started limiting the sales on their websites to maybe you can get it on Tuesday afternoons or one day a week. They'll take online orders from home gardeners, but you're limited to that. But more importantly, and even better for growing, is to go out into your local communities and find seeds locally, because they're going to grow better where you are, as opposed to just going to rareseeds.com, which is a fantastic place to get your seeds. I love Baker Creek. Rareseeds.com has some amazing heirloom genetics, but they're grown in Missouri in most cases. Some of them are grown elsewhere. Point being, they're not grown where you are. And so there's going to be a season to spin them up and to get them used to your climate and for you to get to know them as well. Whereas when you go to your neighbor down the street that you see every day, they've got a garden and you just sort of have been thinking, that's kind of cool. Maybe someday I'll do that. Don't be shy about that. I guarantee that he or she would love to have a conversation about their squash with you. That's why they're out there doing it. They're passionate about it. They are not going to feel like you're wasting their time or you're stealing their resources. And if they're raising food and saving seeds, they've got tons of them. They've got tons of seeds that they'd be more than happy to share with you. And that means you don't just get seeds from somewhere else in the world that then you have to learn and they have to learn your soil and sort of work with them. And maybe it works well, maybe it doesn't. It's seeds that already grow where you are, that you get from someone down the street that you can talk to. They come with the story. Oh, I grew these. They had shade in the afternoons. They really seem to like that. They want more water when it gets hot during the middle of the summer. I mean, the guy knows your environment already. So start as local as possible. And then if you don't have neighbors that you know, then go to the next level out. Look for master gardeners in your area. Many state schools have county extensions where you can get free seeds. A lot of public libraries have replaced their old card catalogs with seed libraries where you can take a few seeds and take them home and grow them and then bring some of those seeds back from what you grew. Save some of those seeds and bring them back to the library, which is a great way to repurpose the card catalog. Master gardeners clubs around you, although some of them will use chemicals. So, you know, just be careful. But look locally, because these are the seeds. For one, these are the seeds that are going to do better for you. And for another, this is just in general, the direction we need to be moving is that decentralized food system, where we're there for each other, where you're feeding your community and you're there for your community. And next year it should be you that's there with, you know, I've got buckets of seeds sitting here where I couldn't, I mean, there's just no way I could possibly make use of all these. So I'm giving seeds away. I thought about starting a seed company, but then you enter, right? Then you enter back into the beast system and there's regulations on it. You have to get them germination tested and you have to, all these laws apply. I'm like, maybe this isn't, maybe I don't want to go that same direction. Maybe I just stand up one of those little boxes on the corner of the street here and say, take seeds, because we all should have them. And if you want to grow food, the last thing that should be stopping you is that you can't find seeds from some online company. So yes, I would say look locally whenever possible and then go, yes, you can still find them online and start. That is true wealth. Start keeping seeds. I mean, this is why, like you said, this is why some of the original currencies, the first forms of currency were wheat or seeds or barley and things like that. This is true wealth, heirloom genetics. That's why people, you know, you look at heirloom varieties and they have names like Uncle Joe's red tomatoes, right? Or Grandpa's sweet peas, because they were people that invested their time in maintaining these genetics and in developing a variety that grew well where they are and produced well. And mortgage lifter tomatoes are called that because there was a guy who was about to lose his home and he worked on this mortgage on a tomato that produced well where he was, and he made enough money to get him out of his mortgage and saved his farm. So I love some of the heirloom genetics. And the other way we know that this is true wealth is that's why the seed companies are so bent over these last few decades on acquiring all the genetics and turning them into Terminator seeds and CRISPR modified. Bill Gates is out there right now doing the same thing with his Ag One project under the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to take total control. They're using, creating a DNA library and then using CRISPR modification to patent the seeds and then take them back to indigenous farmers all around the world and take away, rob them of the seeds that have grown well where they are for generations of farmers and replace them with their modified seeds. It's an absolute crime against humanity. Yes.
If you were one who happened to buy, let's say, a seed vault back 5-10 years ago, how long, or alternatively, how long can you store seeds?
Yeah, you can. Some of those may still germinate. 5 and 10 years. 10 years is certainly pushing it. But you never know. So you can always try. But I think the better answer is the way you store seeds is not by putting them in a bag in the freezer that can work for some amount of time. It is, like I was just describing, maintaining the seed line, growing it out every season or two, right? Because if you grow a broccoli and a cauliflower, they're both brassicas, and so they're intermingle and you would have to do one season and then the next sort of alternate if you wanted to maintain both of those seed libraries. But it's a living thing, right? That's the bottom line here is that seeds are alive. And if you want to save seeds and build up that as a store of wealth, then you got to stay out there with your hands in the dirt, growing them out each season. And again, the good news is they're getting better. They're learning where you are, and each year they're going to perform better for you. So it's an investment. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that.
I'm sorry, Doug.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Christian, what about hydroponics indoors for those of us who live in, you know, horrible weather country?
Yeah. So when I was first getting started, I still lived in San Francisco in a tiny little place I didn't even own. So obviously not a lot of soil to work with there. So I did start learning. I did start a hydroponics system and then in turn an aquaponics system. Hydroponics, just to be clear with everyone, is where it's a closed system. You just run some nutrient-rich water across your plants and they grow. But you are perpetually, that's it. You're perpetually then bound to this idea of external inputs, adding the nutrient solution every day or every week, whatever it is. And so if the stores close or if the supply chain breaks, your nutrient solution is gone and it ends. There's nothing there. So it's a very interesting and novel way of growing food, but it's not I wouldn't call it sustainable in that sense. Aquaponics, though, it's both the portmanteau and conceptually the combination of hydroponics with aquaculture. So rather than adding just an artificial nutrient solution, you've got fish in your aquaponics system. And when you feed the fish, it is their elimination. It's basically, it's the fish pee that then feeds the plants. And then you can, that's it. It's a closed system. And so by virtue of keeping fish in a tank down here and then circulating that nutrient, that solution over the plants, they grow. And it's just an extremely elegant system. Like soil, there's a huge ecosystem in an aquaponic system that I don't think we really fully understand all the organisms that are at play in these aquaponic systems. It's a mini ecosystem. And so it's really quite beautiful. And the good news here is that you can do this in a very small amount of space, whether it's a corner of your house or even in a garage. I was running mine in a garage for a couple of years there before I moved. And there are absolutely ways to grow food in small spaces. I know a lot of people in most audiences don't have a terrific amount of space or disposable income. And so that's always an important thing to mention also, is that you can make a meaningful difference even no matter where you are, right? Even in a small space. Marjorie Wildcraft does a great job talking about a three-part system that really takes a very negligible footprint. And she combines rabbits with a few chickens for eggs. And so between the eggs and chickens, the eggs and rabbits, there's your protein production. And then a garden, which is only, 100 square feet. If you can manage to find that or create it using bags of soil on your rooftop. I've seen people that have gardens on top of their RVs. So really, just it's time to take this seriously and get creative about it. And if you start looking at all the reasons that you can't grow food, you probably won't be able to grow food. But if you really say, I gotta grow food, let's figure this out. I can use the top of my RV or whatever, just work with what you've got. And again, it is possible to make an impact, a meaningful impact on food production.
Wow. Steve, go ahead.
Well, what about to sprouting? My wife has sprouting trays and I forget what we're sprouting all the time. I got to tell you a funny story. One time she decided to grow, what was that grass that, you used to grind up in a wheatgrass, okay? Mm-hmm. My whole house was filled with wheatgrass, trays upon trays. And I thought, well, this sounds really good, except when you actually smell the stuff and drink it, There's a psychological, but about sprouting, isn't it true? Sprouting's where all the nutrients is. You can tell I'm not a farmer, okay? And I thank God you are and know this stuff. But sprouting isn't that really dense nutrient, and most people can pour water over seeds.
Yeah, they are hugely nutritionally dense, and the sprouting process gets rid of a lot of the phytochemicals that keep you. It makes it all bioavailable. So it's pretty clear. The only problem with sprouting is that you're burning through a tremendous amount of seeds for every tray. And because you eat them when they're still so small, these things never go to seed. So it's also hard to describe that as a sustainable thing. You can do it for a while. If you want to have a couple buckets of sprouting seeds in your food stocks to sort of bridge the gap between you and production, or maybe to during the winter months, during that hunger gap, so you can still have some fresh greens. Those are where I can see that being useful. But on an ongoing basis, you're talking about bags and bags of seeds. So it's very expensive in that sense.
In closing, is there anything that, again, first of all, let me say this, everybody. Kirsten's going to be at the conference, virtual conference, one of the keynote speakers. And by listening to him today, I think you get a grasp on what he puts out and the voluminous amount of information that he has. And at the end of the day, everything else, whether it's geopolitics or finance, economy, it all boils down to how you're going to feed your family, feed yourselves. And one of the situations in survival gardening, I forget who it was, Christian, was a guy that said, if you're going to plant under extreme difficulty and you live where you can, plant your seeds along a riverbed, hide it so that when satellite scanning comes over, because when everything's neatly in a row, there's a word for that. I don't know. Maybe it's called guerrilla gardening or something, but I think that's something people have got to understand too, because nowadays we live in a tattletale society. We have spies, eyes in the skies, and every place else. So I think it's important that people understand that to the degree they can hide some of it, it would be a good idea, especially for chemtrail spraying too. They should learn to cover, what they can cover, because quite candidly, it's almost irrelevant to plant organic seed and then have everything from aluminum, barium, human blood cells, all the weird stuff they're putting in the chemtrail spray to basically fall out on your organic crops and undo everything that you're trying to do by getting safe organic food. So I think that's something that people need to understand, that there'll come a time, and again, they'll have to be careful where they plant, but they can plant in unusual places. Obviously, they've got to have sun, water, etc. But, all in lines in a row in nature, nothing is lined up. And satellite, the artificial intelligence looks for symmetry. So anytime you can break that symmetry, it helps to hide your garden.
Yeah, and great mention with guerrilla gardening, this idea that you don't even need property to grow food. You can go put a fig tree or just fruit trees somewhere, depending on where you are. If there's enough precipitation, you can put these things out and about in the city, out in the middle of nowhere, and go check back in there to do harvests every once in a while. No, it's very hard to imagine that even the eye in the sky is going to detect a single fig tree in the middle of nowhere and go and track it down. But that's one way to sort of spread food production all over the place. But you're right that there is a need to be careful with the way you're growing food. And that's also why some of the crops like sunchokes, Jerusalem artichokes, potatoes, some of these things that you can grow during the season, and then they are perfectly content just to sit there under the soil and wait for you to come along and harvest them and eat them, are great, because when you've got, you know, if everything you grow, you have to harvest, for one thing, it's a lot of work to go harvest everything and then hide it somewhere in your house. And you're always worried about someone coming to check stuff. But if you've got beds and beds full of potatoes and you get a knock at the door, I think it's very unlikely that they're going to say, all right, get ready, we're going to go rummage through your entire raised beds, or we're going to look through your entire yard for every last potato. So this is one way that you can hide food effortlessly just by virtue of not harvesting it until you're ready. A lot of those root crops are good for that kind of idea.
Super, Doug.
Steve, whatever happened to the time when the police used aircraft to look for marijuana for cannabis plants, not lettuce or tomatoes or whatever it might be? I mean, so we've gone from that, the surveillance, police surveillance aircraft for cannabis. Now they've legalized cannabis and they're saying you can't grow lettuce, you can't grow tomatoes, you can't grow this or that. You can't have cows, you can't have chickens, you can't have this. This is a bizarre world, to be sure. And that's just my comment on things, but folks.
I think that's astute, Doug. Anything that will hurt you, harm you, control you, put you in an altered state so they can control you is now legal. They're even talking about legalizing mushrooms again, hallucinogenic mushrooms. I think most of Congress has already been experiencing that. But the bottom line is that anything that's good will be made illegal. Anything. And remember this, ladies and gentlemen. This is, and Christian, I don't know if you ever heard the program we talked about, but a couple of years ago I said, you mark my words, they will have smart urinals and smart toilets. Those sensors will be placed there so they'll be able to tell your calorie count, and if you're sneaking anything, like, for instance, vitamin C. I see the day in America where all over-the-counter vitamin supplements are taboo, illegal, or no longer available just because they won't allow them in. So people said, you're going nuts. That's fear-mongering. Wasn't probably a couple weeks, if less than a month after that. Sure enough, somebody has a urinal, and by the way, you have a smartphone, and your smartphone becomes a transmitter, and if it doesn't, you're sitting there staring at the wall if you're a male, or staring at the ball. And I don't mean to be gross. This is true. Or the back of the whatever the door in the stall, and they're monitoring your body functions. And I mean, you guys, this is beyond Orwellian. And then you used to think, well, will they settle for anything less than everything? No, they want everything. They want everything. So calorie counts on the UN. They want everybody on a subsistence diet of what, 1,500 calories. This is something, Christian, that nobody talks about. The United Nations is the greatest, in my opinion, eugenic machine to bring global population annihilation to the forefront under the guise of doing it with a smile on their face. So the idea of growing herbs, anything botanicals, echinacea, the stuff, you know, all that stuff, people need to understand the day will come where you will not be able to buy that unless, of course, you're one of the elite. But this is going to be the most important barter item that you can have. And like, again, I said seeds, but it goes beyond that because, again, like salicylic acid off a tree bark and stuff like that, there are alternatives. God put everything that we need in his original creation. And that, and ladies and gentlemen, that is the main thrust of them killing everything and everyone. We're watching it with spontaneous abortions and women who are pregnant. We're watching it in sperm count. We're a nation that's being robbed of our heritage. They're killing sexual reproduction. They're killing it and have been by all the different additives in the food, the plastic, etc., the xenoestrogen. So all that relates to this. If you do not incorporate what Krishna is talking about, and I don't, we will be at the mercy of the devils until they kill us. But the bottom line is, you cannot raise children on earthworms and insects. You can't do it. You can't do it. So I really wish that I had the words, and I'm going to leave this to you in the closing minutes of the show to say, do people realize the control of food is a control of life, and that we are now seeing, in my opinion, planned extinction protocol by denying food, by regulating food sources. They want us dead. But in the meantime, they want us to pay. In the meantime, they want us to pay through the nose. You want to take that kind of as your exit?
I hope they do, Steve. I mean, I've made that my mission to try and spread the word about that. And, you know, we're certainly not minimizing the importance and the urgency of the situation around the vaccines. That's obviously a huge thing. And mercifully, there's a lot of people talking about it, and it's pretty much front and center for a lot of people. And I think, as you said, food needs to be equally recognized. This is a full-on onslaught. It's happening. A lot of people aren't aware that it's happening. And that's partly because a lot of people just take for granted that there's always been food at the supermarket, and probably there always will be. And I'm more concerned with this thing that everyone's talking about. So that's, you know, again, Doug, thanks for having this conversation on your platform. It is, I think, the most pressing conversation we could be having right now. And yeah, I certainly hope that people are looking at this and saying it's time for me to start growing my own food and raising animals and fighting back against this total technocratic transhumanist takeover of our food system. Yeah,
you're absolutely right. I think this is the most important conversation one could have. Thank you so very much. IceAgeFarmer.com. It'll be in the program description notes again. Yesterday we had a blip. Now it's fixed. But IceAgeFarmer.com, IceAgeFarmer.com, there it is right there. And don't forget, he's going to be speaking at the Gen 6 Extinction Protocols Conference. Go to Gen6.com. That's G-E-N-S-I-X.com for the radio listeners. It's on your screen right there. Pre-order your Extinction Protocols 2021 conference DVD right now. And, hey, get a little bit of silver back at you. All right. Christian, thank you so very much. I mean, you talk about raising the intellectual, the IQ points of this platform. You've done it. And I want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. But thanks again for having this conversation. And let's start growing food and raising animals. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Hi, Christian. Thank you. Thank you again for being one of our speakers at the Extinction Protocols Conference.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
And folks, believe me, that's Exhibit A, Exhibit B, C, and D, why you need to be a part of that conference. I can't wait myself to hear this and to watch this conference, video on demand, DVDs. Do it all. Go to gen6.com. Steve Quayle still with me. We've got about, let me see here. We've got about, 22 minutes or so roughly left of the program. I don't know about you. I was running a list here. I need a cow, a couple of chickens, a rooster apparently. I'm making a list. However, it's important to understand too, guys like that know how to farm or know how to plant. And I guess there's some education involved in that as well. So thank you for bringing them on, and thank you for having this conference. I appreciate
it. Again, I got to tell you, what Christian does, it saves me as a news aggregator, as a researcher, as an author, video guy, whatever else I do, you know, hair puller. The bottom line is that his research is impeccable. His knowledge is functional. He absolutely gets the biggest picture, not just a little picture. And by the way, guys like you and I, Doug, well, there are farmers out there we can support. And I even came up, Christian, one time with a plan to, you know, go to a farmer and say, why don't you take, you know, let's say 100 by 100 feet and allow kind of like, if you will, plots and let people plot, but pay them. Farmers need to be paid. They need to be supported. And I'm telling my wealthy clients, you guys want a living legacy? Find a farmer who's got amazing work ethics and loves the Lord. This is critical. and support him financially. Give him an endowment. Say thank you for raising that 100 head of cattle last year. I'm not kidding. This is something I proposed years ago. Now it's time. But you guys, I want to transition right now to what's going on in Ukraine. And right now it's very, very significant because the information I'm getting from behind the scenes isn't to scare anybody, but the Russian people are being told to prepare for war with the United States. Ukrainian heavy army just basically declared war on Russia. You know, you may hear of 300 Ukrainian tanks and you may hear of 35,000 Ukrainian troops on the border in the Donbass region, but that's eclipsed by 10,000 Russian tanks. These are real numbers, by the way, you guys. 7,500 armored personnel carriers. Last 2 days, President Putin opened up one of their storage facilities for one of their mobile ICBM launchers, pulled the ICBM launcher out, videotaped it, and sent it to NATO headquarters. With that was a message saying to NATO headquarters, you're 3 minutes away from destruction from my hypersonic missile. 4 days or 5 days, give me less than a week, three nuclear subs surfaced in the Arctic, first time in history, 300 yards apiece, apart, 300 yards apart, and open their missile doors. That's a big deal. A day before that, Putin launched from one of his missile frigates, a Zircon missile, 6,100 miles an hour. So much is going on. And we were talking about food with Christian, and the Russians can feed their army. The U.S., because it's focused, in my opinion, so much on social nonsense. This is my words. Obviously, I'm banned on all U.S. military bases. But now they never understood the real, if you will, advances that have taken place with weapons development. The Russians are, and look, I'm not pro-Russian, but I'm trying to tell you, it's always easier to make friends with someone than go to war with them if it's to the mutual benefit. The contemporary people in Washington, and let's call them the fifth column, my words, are instigating and provoking a war right now with between the United States, the Ukraine, NATO, and Russia. The French, I think, defense minister or prime minister, one of the two, made the statement to the French people, prepare for war casualties equal to World War II. The Russian civil defense years ago, you guys, when I started, 35 years ago, when I started in the, prep movement, survival movement, I studied nothing but Russian war policy. In those days, China wasn't a factor. So it was pretty much Russian war policy, NATO war policy, all of the civil defense places around the world, who integrated civil defense, i.e. Switzerland, i.e. Finland, and the whole attitude of preparing for hopefully what would never come, but preparing for what may come. Unfortunately, in the United States, there is no civil defense. There are no civil defense shelters. There isn't even a consciousness of World War III. The headlines of the world are saying, uh-oh, yesterday on the American Military Network News, I posted the story where the U.S. head of forces in Europe, Special Operations Commander, European Command, EUCOM, made the statement, prepare for immediate hostilities. I think the problem with most people in America is they think the transgender, the whole mismatched alphabet movement, so far that even CNN went and one of their people said there is no way to define a boy or a girl from birth. Well, there is if you're not a bloody sexual mutilation person. Everything and everything is on the table right now. And maybe I should say it differently. Anything and everything is on the table right now. The bridge, one of the biggest bridges in the world, has just been closed and been declared a military zone. Russia is sending its 56th Airborne Brigade to Crimea. Now, why is this all important, everybody? This is not an exercise. people say, well, NATO was planning an exercise. Well, then maybe Russia wouldn't be reacting that way if they didn't. The Crimean Bridge is now closed. I'm watching off the corner of my eye. The information I'm getting is the direct provocation. Now, look at what's playing here. There's a bigger picture, ladies and gentlemen. You have the Biden interests, his son, his own, and the Ukraine and all the business dealings, the infamous laptop experience. You have Nancy Pelosi's son, as of yesterday, being tied in with some shenanigans in Ukraine. And in case people don't know, war is always used to cover up the crimes of the international elite and bankers every time. And yet innocent tens of millions of people die. So while we're talking, and rightly so, about this, is we have an incident that, and I pray it doesn't go hot. And I still believe, by the way, the conference is going to happen. I'll tell you why, because I believe there will be an incident. It'll be provocative. Maybe a city in the U.S. gets nuked, or something, Paris gets nuked, or London, or someplace, and there's reciprocal. And then something happens, and it dies down, meaning it backs off for a while. But we're living in a time unlike any others, brothers and sisters, in the history of the world. Jesus said there's never been a time like it, nor would be again. And if he didn't shorten the days for the elect's sake, there'd be no flesh left alive. We talked just briefly when Christian was on, and we were talking about everything going on to destroy human reproduction. Imagine, Doug, and you and I met however many, 20 years ago maybe, but imagine when I wrote the book Genetic Armageddon, Today's Technology, Tomorrow's Monsters, talking about sex robots.
Yep.
Well, we just had an announcement that one of the biggest sex robot manufacturers, that the robot said basically on its own, I won't say her own, on its own, that robots will win. Robots will win. I didn't think there was robot wars. But look at this. What has happened? You have the alienation of females worldwide against males worldwide. Obviously, the birth rate is declining drastically across the planet, but in the United States, we're almost to the place where we may not be able to reproduce ourselves. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want people to really understand this. The only freedom you have is what you're willing to fight and die for. The only family you have is what you're willing to fight and die for. And if you aren't willing to fight and die for them, will you at least be willing to stand up and speak to those issues that will affect their lives? And if those of you who have childbearing age children, you'll have no grandchildren. And like Christian said, and I agree with him, that if you're starving people and you offer a bottle of water, an MRE, that sounds awfully good to a hungry man and a thirsty man. But what is the price? An entrance. What is the price into that world? Probably your eternal soul. I tell people, you can't just say trust God if you've never lived there all your life claiming to be a Christian. You have to have a history of praying, seeking, believing. Jesus said, whatever you pray for, believing that you receive, asking you shall receive. So, Doug, at this point on this, what is today? It's Thursday, April 1st. This is no joke, okay? Doug and I talked before the podcast. Neither one of us do April Fool's jokes. I think it's so, how should I say this?
Stupid?
It's not stupid, but irresponsible given the point we're at. Yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, we just found out what's going on with the food carrying and production capacity in the United States. Food rationing. Food rationing in Britain stayed in place for 10 years after World War II. I didn't know that. In the United States, it got back on track much faster. But all of these events are not just some kind of throwing darts at a world map saying, well, let's see how we can screw with humans more. But it is a supernatural evil that's being absolutely initiated in all realms. Everything the King of Glory, the Lord Jesus Christ, the God of heaven, creator of heaven and earth, has created is under attack by the devil and hell. When God gave humanity, he said, be fruitful and multiply, ordain marriage, He gave us the ability to procreate, not create out of nothing, because only God can do that. And now you have a whole world of Luciferian scientists, of Luciferian elitists, and that's because they serve Lucifer as God, saying everything he made is bad. We'll do it in our image and likeness. It seems to me there's a whole lot of death and a whole lot of perversion and a whole lot of diversion and a whole lot of infighting, a whole lot of murder, you name it, going on for those who want to recreate the world in their image and likeness. Humanity is to be destroyed. 7.4 billion people. That's on the Georgia Guidestones. I don't know, Doug, how many years quoting every single globalist illuminist who's been quoted or quotable as to how many people they want to kill. And ladies and gentlemen, it's 95% of the world's population pretty much. So if that doesn't affect you, if that doesn't provoke you to say, maybe I should take some steps or efforts, or more importantly, what happens when I die? The man who has the Lord Jesus Christ, who is our life eternal, has a knowing that no one else can, because God sent Jesus to be the ultimate answer to the fear of death and the wondering after the afterlife. Look, as somebody who's studied mythology and written about it and all the stuff I've written about and the Egyptians and their Book of the Dead, I say this, you're better off on the King of Glory's side, the Lord Jesus Christ, and the Book of Life, because the Book of Life is something that no one else could offer your name to be written in except the living God. Someone said, why do you always preach? Because it's the only answer I have for what is upon us now. Go ahead, Doug.
No, I just amen to that. You know, in speaking with Daniel Holdings yesterday, again, who will be a speaker at the Extinction Protocols Conference, we were discussing all of these, the convergence of events and how things are playing out. You mentioned, of course, the potential prospect for world war. Christian talked about, the Ice Age farmer talked about the food, all of this. I mean, right now, there's a battle, Steve, and I'll just end it, this way. To me, there is a battle going on right now. You've got people who are just absolutely brainwashed, I tried to make a joke or from what I saw on a message forum. You know, what was the most washed, a part of the body in the year 2020? And, people said the hands. Well, I say the brain. You know, we have been brainwashed and to see, you know, Steve, to see the level of people digging down or digging in with their positions, you've got to get the jab in the arm or you must not, or you must teach critical race theory. You must embrace this racial, disparity and understand it. You must have open borders. And you know, the chasm between the ideologies. There's no room for discussion anymore, Steve. You asked a question of Christian or mentioned it. I don't believe people right now. I think their hearts are hardened, and I think that they are absolutely incapable of or unwilling to listen to anything with respect to what's really true. And I find that very, very scary and sad. Scary for the population, sad for their eternal souls. That's my view.
Well, the Bible teaches, Doug, right now at this point, people will choose to embrace the lie and resist the truth. Because over and over and over, the Gospels present a people presented with, or they present the truth. They present the person of Jesus Christ. The New Testament church, the Book of Acts church, could obviously produce the miracles. This one, there are select miracles every place, around the world in different places, but not every place to the same degree. It was the Book of Acts. Someone said, how can you say that? Simple. If we had done it the same way or with a new approach, something God says, I'm going to do something new with the Book of Acts, we wouldn't have gone to committee. We wouldn't have gone to professional, quote, stage performances. We would have gone to the guy in the street saying, rise up and walk, or the person that lost this or lost that. I'm talking about limbs. So the thing is that here's the other thing. It can't be breached, because even the Bible and the book of Luke talks about Abraham's bosom. And Abraham makes a statement to the rich man, begging Abraham to come and help him. And he said, even if we could, there's an inescapable gulf, or an there's a demarcation between us. If we could come and help you, we can't come and help you. And that's what people have got to understand. The polarization may be 50-50 now, but very soon it's going to turn to 80-20. 80% against Christians, 20% Christians, and it's going to diminish. They will not be happy until the blood flows. Our heads are separated from the shoulders. Now, I'm sorry to have to talk this way, but it's time the people of God understood. The reason this happens is because we have not been the salt of the earth. We have not been the light that's set on a hill. We have been so, fighting the wrong battle, or denying there even is a battle. Now we've got a nation of spies. We've got, I hate to say this, you will see more Christian betrayal of Christians than you ever saw the world betraying Christians. You know why? Because all that a man has will he give for basically his pottage, his food, what we were talking about. Obviously, you know, the whole thing of Jacob and Esau sold his birthright. So why have Christians sold our birthright? That's a question I'll leave with everybody to think about. Who told you to sell your birthright? Why would you sell your birthright? And what I mean by selling our birthright as believers who have been born again by the blood of Jesus, repenting of our sins, walking to the best of our ability, calling on God, the reason we're in this mess is because we allow public opinion to determine the narrative against us, and take, instead of taking God's word and going forth in the power of his Holy Spirit and not being afraid of them. We're more afraid of them than they are of us. And now they figure it's time to kill them all. That really doesn't set well with a lot of people. Yet you have some of the biggest ministries in the world, evangelicals, saying, take the shot. Jesus would take the shot. Wrong, Franklin Graham. Wrong, Dobson. Would you know how big those guys are compared to you? Yep, I do. I do. I acknowledge that. It's not about me. It's about the principle. If our body's the temple of the Holy Ghost and God's word is real, then how can killing myself or making myself a potential burden to my wife or my loved ones because I basically become incapacitated for life or worse, die, how is that even good stewardship? No science, no test. All results are proving it's a false narrative. Even that weasel from the CDC, Fauci, is now saying, well, the vaccines may not be safe. You going to tell that to every widow? You going to tell that to every widower? You weasel? In my opinion, the guy's a weasel.
Steve, we've been unceremoniously hacked off right there. I apologize for that. Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com, gen6.com. Folks, go to gen6.com. That is G-E-N-S-I-X, gen6.com. And certainly sign up for the conference. It is going to be amazing. It's absolutely going to be amazing. You heard Ice Age Farmer earlier, and Steve Quayle, of course, rounding it out. Don't forget, on April 8th, Dr. Tenpenny will be joining us for the entire show. That's next Thursday already. That's right. That's a week from today, Dr. Tenpenny, who will also be at the conference. Folks, I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, each and every one of you who have helped us on this platform to stay on the air, to fight the big tech censorship, to do everything that we're able to do. Thank you so very, very much. I just want to say God bless each and every one of you. I read everything you send. I'm trying to catch up on notes and writing back. But really, love you. Appreciate you. Appreciate you supporting this platform. And may God bless each and every one of you in the coming days, which I have a feeling are going to be dark, trying. But hey, we have to look up. look at God for answers. You know, there are no political there are no political solutions for spiritual problems. That's where we're at. I got it. See, right before the music. Thank you. Eric the Tech, thank you so very much for patchworking this together. God bless, folks. Good night.